And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Paul.
All right, we're going to start hour two of the El Paso History Show with an El Paso History Moment. And just a second, guys, an El Paso History Moment produced by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. And by the way, we expect Melissa back here next week. You never know. Well, Wendy, in the meantime, is still here. Her history moment today, Melissa's moment today, is about the most recent 12 Travelers Monument subject, and that would be Susan McGoffin.
A woman's tale from the Camino Real. Susan McGoffin from Kentucky was the first Anglo woman to document her adventures along the El Camino Real de Tierra Adentro. In one chapter, Susan wrote that when she left Santa Fe on October 7, 1846, with her husband Samuel and headed south toward El Paso del Norte, they stopped for a while in San Gabriel, New Mexico. But in January 1847, they heard news of a rebellion at Taos, which Susan wrote of as a perfect revolution. Soon rumors came that the population of New Mexico was rising between us and Santa Fe, and in truth, we are flying before them and were in a state of constant fear as we passed through the Ordeña del Muerto, or Journey of Death, a hostile and waterless stretch of desert. Upon reaching El Paso del Norte in February of 1847, Susan was greatly relieved and impressed with the community, with its many orchards and vineyards, and the civilized manners and learning of their Mexican hosts. They stay with priest Ramon Ortiz y Mira before departing on their final leg of the journey to Mexico City. More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
This El Paso History Moment is brought to you by Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Go online to sargentinventoryservices.com.
I went there, and there they were, just standing there looking at me on the internet.
Inventory.
That's the History Alliance, and they're a big deal on Facebook.
They're on Facebook with more than 45,000 followers. You can check that out. We also want to mention another great partner in remembering and keeping alive El Paso history, and that's Barbara Givenbaney, who operates an incredible Facebook page called Remember in El Paso When. More archive and incredible historical photos than you've ever seen in your life. You should go there and take a look at them during the show. And another administrator who works with Barbara is Fred Whitlocks.
And they do a great job on there, and they're all volunteers. That's what they do. And that's a lot of history there. If you're ever looking for an archive picture and you don't know where to find it, go there. Because they've got, well, for example, one time I said, can I get a picture of Hart's Mill? She sent me 10 of them. And I had never seen 9 of them.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing there. All right, moving on to the history at hand. That was the 12 Travelers, their monument number 3, Susan McGoffin. Number 4 is going to be Benito Juarez. And we're talking public art here, basically. And that's what we have the second hour. Adair's with us. And also we have people joining us this morning on the middle of your radio, so to speak. We have Dr. Melissa Warwick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. And we'll get your expertise in a moment. But we also want to welcome Dr. Kate Green, the curator of the Museum of Art.
Thank you for having me.
Did I get that right? Dr. Kate Green.
Yes.
That's who you are.
That is exactly
who
I am.
Well, it's good of you to join us. And Adair, you're still sticking around. We thank you for everything you've done to help organize public art in El Paso. This conversation is more about that because the two of you are not from El Paso and you do not have the background of John Hauser and Oñate and all that stuff that the rest. You're fairly new here. How long have you been in town?
I've been here for about 3.5 years.
So you're learning a lot, but you've heard you've heard some of this.
Yeah.
Just lift that mic up a little bit for your own benefit.
There we go. Can you hear me better?
Okay. I can certainly hear you now. And Kate, you're fairly new. You're just here in 2018.
2 months. And yes. So, it's been all of 2 months.
So what are you thinking about what you're hearing here? All of a sudden, I think you're looking at something that – I'm hoping you're looking at something that you might consider to be world-class history that you never heard before.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that certainly was one of the reasons why I was attracted to coming to the museum to work with the team here is because of the rich history here. And it's so rich and so complicated, and that makes it a particularly exciting place to be. So I'm really happy to be immersed in it and to beginning to learn and to incorporate that into everything we're doing at the museum.
History overlaps.
It does.
It's
indeed.
All over the place.
Yeah.
And you have a number of artists who have taken upon themselves to do the history. Tom Lee was one of them. John Hauser was another. And who else can we think of that also did what we're talking about? I mean, you have other artists, Adair.
Well, of course, Jose Cisneros was such an important historical. I mean, when my son studied in Madrid, Spain, all their professors knew about the borderlands through his illustrations.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
They'd been disseminated through so many books. Mm-hmm. They all knew Jose Cisneros. Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing that a lot of people in Spain also seem to know, and that is what happens at Chamizal every year, the Renaissance fair they do in Spanish, the Siglo de Oro.
Absolutely.
And so that's another thing that actually is well known outside of El Paso.
Worldwide.
About El Paso, yeah. Well, the thought today on this idea of public art. Melissa, you're a professor. What are you teaching now?
I teach all of the modern and contemporary art history at UTEP. So my current courses are art since 1945, which is taught in a global context. I'm teaching a history of performance art, and I'm teaching a course on identity in 20th and 21st century art.
These are worldwide topics, or are they localized to El Paso?
Mostly worldwide. Okay. So, yeah, there are ways, though, that I do bring in a lot of El Paso artists. So one of my favorites is Luis Jimenez. And he was somebody who I think also was very much on the world stage before that, because in 2008 and 2009, I was a research fellow at the National Portrait Gallery at the Smithsonian.
Oh, my.
Well, they have his vaquero right out front. And to me, it's a huge symbol of El Paso that was actually there, because you don't see, you know, cactus in Washington, D.C. So it was, and it's a statement too, which is saying that art of the Americas is still American art. And I think that that's something that the Portrait Gallery and the Smithsonian American Art Museum, which are in the same, housed in the same building, what they're trying to do. And I think that that's something important to think about here. So since I'm an educator, I'm very interested in what the Tom Lee Institute is doing.
Work on that mic.
Sorry, this mic is, yeah.
You have to chase that mic around the room.
I'll do this in a second. Yeah, so I'm very interested in what they're doing, just because it directly affects my students. You know, they come in from the public school system, and it's wonderful to be able to, for me, the more arts education we can get in our schools, the better. And art, part of the reason why I'm an art historian is that I think that our culture, we can understand cultures through images. It's a great way to understand the history of the world. And so the way that the Tom Lee Institute can combine artists like Hauser and Tom Lee in understanding El Paso history, I think is very crucial. And it directly affects my students as they're coming into UTEP, because most of them are from the school districts from around El Paso. So for me, it's wonderful.
And when you have these students in your college-level classes, are they aware of Tom Lee? Are they aware of Jose Cisneros?
They are usually more about Tom Lee, and mm-hmm. I think that that is in large part because of events like Tom Lee Month in October, which really draw in more people, and then also just access to the museums. Mm-hmm. And that's been a huge thing. So this is where, you know, Kate comes in. I mean, I'm very excited about the things that are going on at the El Paso Museum of Art. There's a new director who's just come in last year, new figures in the education department. I work closely with them with some programming with my own students. Kate, of course, who, full disclosure, we're graduate school friends, so we've known each other for many years. And I've admired Patrick, the head curator at the museum, for a long time. So I'm really excited about the things that are upcoming, mm-hmm. also that the museum is doing. But the fact that so many children get to go in and see these great works, to me, it really is one of the best things about this city, is having a museum like that, having places like the Tom Lee Institute that foster interest in the arts, mm-hmm. And then the ways that they can spread throughout the community and understanding not just art but history as well.
And I wanted to actually ask Holly a question. Last hour, when she teaches and works with the San Eli School District, do the kids get to go on a field trip to see the Oñate statue?
Well, as part of the curriculum she's been working on, mm-hmm. the grand finale is a tour.
Oh.
So many teachers opt into that.
Yes.
So they'll take them on a downtown walking tour.
Yeah.
Oñate is part of this new curriculum. So that
terrific.
Of course, we can bring them. We do show Fry Garcia the San Francisco, who's downtown.
Right, right. Because seeing them in person and seeing the scale of Oñate and the magnificence of Fray Garcia, I think that would really be a lasting impression for these young kids.
Absolutely. And I'd like to say something about Melissa, because she has started teaching Tom Lee. He wasn't incorporated into.
Yes.
Is it American art?
Yes. I teach him in two or three courses, actually. So I teach a U.S. art class. I teach a class on U.S. and European art, so where we kind of toggle between the two. And then I also teach a course on early 20th century art, where I'm really able to talk about the Pass of the North. And especially, you know, for my students, so many of them are either active military or veterans. Yeah. So Tom Lee's images from Peleliu, from the Pacific,
World War II.
Are very, yeah, they really, really gravitate toward them.
Wow.
So, and I can tell that because I actually give my students a lot of choice when they write research papers for me on the objects. And pretty much every time, if I'm teaching Tom Lee, then I will have at least one student, if not more, who choose something from Tom Lee's work. So what that tells me is that they really are interested in the local and the global. And mm-hmm. I think that that's a great balance to be able mm-hmm. to have.
Yeah. And Tom Lee's position on the world stage.
Yes.
Because during World War II, when he was the correspondent for Life magazine, his images were seen nationally, nationwide, if not worldwide.
They were the images from the war yeah. that people were getting at the time.
In a show we did at the World War II Museum in New Orleans, there was a Japanese prisoner of war who had copied his Death of the Wasp on a handkerchief
yeah.
when in prison before he committed suicide. I mean, those images impacted. Of course, that was a Japanese victory.
Yeah.
That Tom, he wasn't a super, I mean, Maceo Daly spoke about him. He thought he was going to be a super patriot. He was very realistic about the war.
He was a correspondent.
Well, he had a bullet in his face. I mean, yeah. he saw it.
Yeah, he saw it.
Oh, so. My God. Well, you also talk about public artwork. And in addition to your students from El Paso, you probably get a lot of kids coming from Juarez, too.
I do, yes.
And we were talking on the phone briefly about how much art, public art there is in Juarez.
Yes. So, I mean, one of the big examples, of course, is The X by Sebastian, which I you know, it sounds like some kind of a cliche, but I actually look out of this from my backyard.
You can see it from your house.
I can see it from my backyard. Yes, and so when people come over, when my family comes in from out of town, you know, I always point it out because you can see it day or night. It doesn't matter.
Right, it's there.
But, you know, these my own research is mostly on abstract art. And so I am very drawn to that, and I really like that particular monument. I like the Aguacera that's downtown also by the same mm-hmm. artist, Sebastian.
Have you been up in that X?
I have not been up in the
X. I haven't either. Have you been up in the X?
Yeah. Can you go up?
I don't think you can go
I think they wanted you to be able to go up, but
it's too hot.
That's you can't get up there?
They haven't.
You can't. It turned out that it was too hot.
So you tried it.
I've been doing a lot of work in Juarez, so I've been trying to understand what's going on and whether I could go
And this
in
is Dr. Kate Green. Kate, what are your thoughts on Juarez art? I mean, it's everywhere, isn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, I've been working really closely with the museum in Juarez on our biennial, which opens at the end of this month. And so a lot of the, you know, as we've been talking here, I've been thinking about how important of a partnership that is and that these, you know, two essentially neighborhoods are joined in this project. If we think of Juarez almost as a neighborhood and El Paso as another neighborhood, right? They're we're working together, and I really think, you know, echoing what Melissa was saying, that, you know, pairing thinking about all of these students that Melissa is working with and all of our audiences, you know, thousands of people are crossing the bridge every day, a half mile from the museum, and to give people an opportunity to think about their context, its history, the history of this area, and the present through objects is really exciting. So it's really exciting to be working in the museum towards making those moments that much more relevant to people's lives and thinking about both how people encounter art outside and inside, whether it's objects or performance or other ways. So we're really thinking about that at the museum, both inside, outside, our space, Juarez, objects, more ephemeral ways of thinking about art, because all of this really, as you and I were talking earlier, Jackson, that you know, these things really matter. They really affect our lives, as Melissa's saying with her students, and
we need to take a break here, but in the meantime, just real quick, John Hauser's vision was to put that Oñate monument right on top of the parking lot at the Camino Real Hotel, mm-hmm. which had been right there across the street from the art museum. And, you know, that would have been certainly an interesting little world to have go on there. And he wanted them all over the place. As it turns out, he got one there.
Right.
But Fray Garcia,
yeah.
Right. One thing Tom said, which is true about a monument that scale, and, of course, it grew before he had a space for it. And Tom said, really, the only backdrop for a monument that large is the sky. Or a huge boulevard. We came close to it at the airport when the airport stepped forward. But so many people go by it now and don't notice it. And you can really appreciate it. You learn so much about history. Like Melissa loves horses.
Yes.
I know, you know, the horseshoes are larger than the hooves because those are the kinds of horseshoes they use to cause the horse, if I recall correctly, Tony Pena might correct me, but to cause them to pick their feet up. So when you're teaching children, you're talking about imagery on his helmet that they found in a cave.
It's right in
so it ties directly to history, and they were so, you know, they with reverence were looking at history to try to capture it in a way you can really teach children about what came before them.
Interesting stuff. We need more of that. We'll talk again. But in the meantime, we got to do some trivia, which is relevant to this, I think. And you ready for Wendy Polk? You ready for some
trivia? I am always ready for trivia.
Ready for some trivia? Well, throw it out at us. What do you got?
Well, in the first hour, we were talking about John Hauser and his father, who was also an artist, who worked on a famous set of sculptures that are in South Dakota.
Yeah.
When John was a boy. So the question is, what was that huge monumental project that John Hauser's father worked on in South Dakota?
We have an answer. Our call screener Shelley says she knows.
She can't answer.
No, you can't do that. Use your cell and call yourself Shelley. No, even think about it.
Or use a fake name.
So what was the big project in South Dakota that John Hauser grew up watching his father help build?
And his father was Ivan Hauser.
Ivan. And what's the second question?
Second question is, which is the largest of the 12 traveler monuments so far?
And we've got three up.
Three up and one in the maquette stage.
And that is the question. What's the tallest one?
Who's the biggest?
How hard is this? We're trying to give this stuff away.
We've talked about this a whole lot.
Oh, you got a $20 Pepe certificate. We're going to Pepe's, by the way. I've already warned him we're coming.
Good.
Anybody wants to go to lunch at Pepe's, you're welcome to show up. In fact, I'll buy lunch for any of you three that show up. How's that sound?
And me too?
No, yes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, yes, you're the wife. She's not only Wendy the wife, but today she's co-host. And last night she retired from being editor of El Paso Inc. and just did the magazine four times a year. Last night, you were the editor of the Ink again.
I was filling in, and it was just like riding a horse and falling off.
Which
you
we
never
all
forget.
Know about.
You never forget. Yeah,
and we're going to make a maquette out of you. Is that what?
On the ground.
So what were those questions again?
Okay. John Hauser's father, Ivan, was an artist who worked on a huge sculptural project in South Dakota. What was the project?
$20 or the other question?
Or a DVD. And what is the largest of the 12 traveler monuments so far?
We have two callers already. And Shelley, I'll buy you lunch, Shelley. What do you think about? Okay, I'll buy you lunch at Pepe's. You don't need to answer the question.
Okay,
these people that want to call in,
yes,
they have to use a phone.
They can use the phone and call 915-544-5876. Or 544-KTSM.
All great automotive sales involve two things: a specific group of vehicles that have to be sold, and a specific time in which those vehicles must be sold. So give me your attention for just a minute, and I'll tell you how you can save a boatload of bucks on a pre-owned vehicle. The Barnett family, the same family that owns Barnett Harley-Davidson, also owns the Rides Auto Group car lot at I-10 and Gateway. Here's the magic trick. We're about to make that car lot disappear. And as the magicians say, first we'll need your assistance. We have to sell 90 cars in 60 days, meaning all reasonable offers will be accepted, and probably a few unreasonable ones too. During this blowout sale, at least half our cars and trucks must go. The rest will magically reappear in another part of town. More on that later. What you need to know is this. If you want a ridiculous deal on a pre-owned car or truck, you need to get down to our Rides Gateway East location just off I-10, or give us a call at 915-629-7433. The blowout sale at the Rides Auto Group. Hurry, because as the magicians say, now you see them, now you don't.
Message and data rates may apply.
Remembering when to change your fridge filter is a hassle. Remembering the right filter is almost impossible. So at Filters Fast, we have some good advice. Forget it. Instead, remember this. Text FAST to 443-443 and check fridge filters off your to-do list forever. Get it all taken care of for a fraction of big box store prices with a Filters Fast brand filter. To see how much you can save, plus get free shipping, text FAST to 443-443. With a huge range of brand name filters available, Filters Fast is America's number one online filtration company. And you can get a Filters Fast brand filter for a fraction of the price, delivered to your door every time you need it. No need to remember. It's not a matter of if you need a fridge filter. Why not text to get it taken care of? To see how much you can save and get free shipping, text FAST to 443-443. That's F-A-S-T to 443-443.
Americans are always on the move. They're in the car or at the office or working around the house. Americans refuse to sit still. So how do you connect with all those moving targets? Easy, with radio. Radio reaches 93% of Americans every week. More than Google, Facebook, even television. Because, hey, who has time to sit and watch TV? So when you want to connect with all those constantly moving adults, teens, and millennials, get to iHeartMedia.com and put AM/FM radio to work for your company.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We got full lines, Kay, Peter, and Paul. And if a line goes down, call us anyway. If we have run out of questions, we'll make some up or we'll ask you to ask us a question.
Let's
and if
do
we
that.
Think it's valuable, we'll give you a prize anyway. But first, let me tell you who's in here next week. This year's festival, the Chamizal. The National Memorial is having Siglo del Oro. And it's been renamed Nuevo Siglo Drama Festival, including contemporary Latin and Chicano works, classics from Spain's golden years, and how the El Paso Symphony, El Paso Youth Symphony Orchestra are part of this whole event this year. April 7th, William Beaumont Hospital. Haven't talked to them about them and their history. Interesting history they'll be in, and Bernie Sargent's back on that day. April 14th, the Mission Trail is recreating the first Thanksgiving in Socorro. And also the San Elizario Genealogy and Historical Society describing their 3 days of events on their 24th annual conference that they have every year. April 21, World War II story about Company E from South El Paso. An entire company of soldiers from Mexican-American households were put together and kept together and fought together.
And died together.
And there's a movie is coming, which is why I asked the author to come back and he's going to join us. And that's on April 21, Preservation Month on April 28. May 5th, what are the Lincoln County Wars? Oh, my goodness, we're going to take that apart, put that back together. Why Billy the Kid ever became famous? And, well, that's what happened. Additional preservation stuff on May the 12th. May 19th, the Crest Collection. We're going to have the Museum of Art people come back. But this time we got Patrick Shaw,
Cable.
That's a lot of names there. But you know these names, don't you, Kate?
I do.
And also the Dr. Elizabeth Dwyer. And Crest Interpretive Fellow. So we're going to talk all about the Crest Collection coming up there. And what do you got?
Well, here's something to put on your calendar for Sunday, April 29th, from 8 to 11 a.m. Go out and walk on Scenic Point. That's the day when it's closed to traffic and it's safe to walk or ride your bike. But it's going to be a walk through time with some very special presenters. Eric Kappas from Southwest University talking about geology. Anthony Alvarez from EPISD. Melissa Ayres Grossman with the Texas Trost Society talking about our wonderful architect Henry Trost. Phil Goodell from UTEP who also likes rocks. And then Jackson Polk, this guy, from the El Paso History Radio Show talking about history.
Well, I'm in the Padre Mine. What happened to the lost Padre Mine?
You're still looking for it, huh?
I'm not going to tell.
Okay.
I mean, you think if I found it, I'd tell you?
Not me.
I might tell you, because, I mean, there's legal issues there. But in the meantime, Wendy Polk, we got some people on the phone who want to talk about stuff. Let's go to, in the order they call, we got Kay. Kay, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, I want to thank you all for making Saturday one of my wonderful times of the week, because I always enjoy listening to you, second generation El Pasoan, and I always learn something.
Thank you.
Oh, terrific.
Thank you kindly for what you say, and the check's in the mail, but I don't know you, so I can't send you a check, so anyway.
That's okay.
Well, thank you for saying it. What's on your mind about trivia? You got other things going on?
Yeah, I'd like to answer the first one about that giant undertaking.
Okay, the question is, John Hauser's father, Ivan Hauser, who was an artist, worked on what huge sculptural installation in South Dakota?
Mount Rushmore.
We're just handing you stuff
job.
There. So
good
you got
job.
Your choice of DVDs here. Or
a $20 coupon to Pepe's. What would you like?
Let me have a DVD.
Okay, give her a good one here. How about Waco Tanks? What do you got in there?
Well, what are you interested in? Montecristo Rey, Legends of El Paso's Mountains, El Paso's MacGuffin Home, Mexican Revolution Sites, Gunfights at the Old West, Ghost Stories,
Let's do MacGuffin Home.
MacGuffin's good.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
That's another piece of El Paso history most people don't know about. And, you know, it's a fabulous house, a fabulous museum. So, all right, well, thank you for playing there. Hold on there. Shelley will tell you how to pick that up. Thanks a lot, Kay. Thank you for playing. Hold on there. Also, we got another guy on the phone here. This would be Paul. Paul, we got you on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Great show.
Thank you.
Yes.
We got one question left. You ready?
Yes.
The question is, what is the largest of the 12 traveler monuments?
I would presume it's the Don Juan Arnorte at the airport.
You're correct.
That's a good presumption.
Yeah, you are right about that. You got just now what we got left here. The $20 of Pepe's is still on the table here, and or a DVD. We got more DVDs.
I guess Pepe's. What the heck, right?
Have you been there?
You got to eat, you know.
I haven't, so I'm looking forward to it.
You need to go. Now, it's not old food. It's old recipes. I got that wrong. People think they're serving old food. It's old recipes. But they're historic. But the point is, that's an historic old restaurant that these guys took over the recipes, and they still do it out there in Canyatillo.
So. The old Griggs recipes.
Yeah, it's a Griggs restaurant. Anything else on your mind this morning?
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. One is, was it ever uncovered the cause of the crash of the airplane up on Stanton, the mountain above Stanton? And secondly, was there ever a thought to put any kind of memorial up there to those guys who lost their lives?
Both I can tell you. There is a monument actually a historical marker at the end of Stanton Street explaining the crash of the B-36 in December of 1953. The reason it crashed is the airplane pilot took the plane off of radar. He didn't like what the tower was saying, so he thought he knew El Paso, and he flew right over Crazy Cat Mountain. He was told he had to clear the Franklins. I think he looked down, he saw Crazy Cat and turned right.
Thought that was it.
Because it was in a snowstorm and a fog storm, and he couldn't see the mountain. He'd never flown El Paso before, and he got rid of the radar. The pilot, it went down as pilot error.
Bad idea.
So there you go. All right, hold on, Shelley. We'll tell you to pick up your prize, all right?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for playing. Here we got, and this guy gets a Pepe's, right? Is that what we did with him? No, whatever.
Yes, Pepe's.
This one got Pepe's.
Yeah.
It's been so long since we had that discussion. I'm sorry. But we're going to take another break and come back and talk about art history in general. He, on one, gets a Pepe's. Three is a brand new call. So talk to three, Shelley. Three. By the way, need to thank Shelley for what she does in there, taking the phone calls and the abuse from the hosts and doing a great job as we go. And the other guy in there, Sergio Valenzuela, thank you, Sergio, for doing everything you do. We always refer to him as
Sergio Valenzuela.
You have to announce it like it's a soccer game, you know. All right, we're going to take it. All the phone lines are now ringing, Shelley. Good luck with that. And we're going to take a break and come back after this. Look at Facebook. Tell us about a Pastor's Radio Show.
A Paso History Radio Show is on Facebook. You can also listen to us online. If you go to ktsmradio.com and get the iHeartRadio link, you can listen to this show anywhere in the world.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs, like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution Sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.
What would you do if you won the lottery? Maybe take a long vacation, Bahamas, Maui, Paris. Maybe fill an entire pool with nacho cheese and have the world's biggest nacho party. Maybe get that tractor you've always wanted. Well, the Texas Lottery has paid out more than $21 billion to lottery winners. People who simply had a dream and bought a ticket. Lottery.com makes it even easier to play and track winnings. Download the Lottery.com app and get your first ticket for free.
So go ahead, dream on. What would you do if you won? Go to lottery.com to learn more.
Did you know that every type of cancer is associated with its own ribbon color? Pink for breast, blue for prostate, white for lung cancer. Join runners and walkers alike at the Rio Grande Cancer Foundation's second annual Run Together 5K Run Walk, recognizing all the colors of cancer. It's happening Sunday, April 8th at Cohen Stadium. Register online and find your cancer ribbon color at rgcf.org. All the proceeds from this event stay in El Paso to help El Pasoans with, through, and beyond the cancer journey.
Message and data rates may apply. Please don't text while driving.
If you've been in business more than 20 minutes, you've probably printed your logo on all kinds of promotional products. We all know logos work because they're on everything from the top of skyscrapers to the bottom of shoes. Ever wondered why? Or how to best use your logo to grow your business? Let us show you today for free. We're 4imprint, promotional product experts at your service. We're giving away the latest issue of Amplify, the digital magazine that reveals promotional product success stories absolutely free to everyone who texts CLAIM to 88988. At 4imprint, we make your logo look perfect on thousands of promotional items. With our 100% guarantee, it'll be right the first time, on time, every time. Your free e-magazine will reveal invaluable insights that can attract new customers, build your brand, and grow your business. Get the latest issue of Amplify absolutely free by texting CLAIM to 88988. That's C-L-A-I-M to 88988.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We have on hold Nick Hauser. We'll get to Nick in just a second. But we need to tell you right now what's going on this week only in El Paso, Inc.
What's the next big thing in retail and where you can already find it in El Paso?
Also in the Inc., how a conflict between Sheriff Wiles and SB4 got settled, at least for now.
And after just 3 weeks on the job, El Paso's TechSmart manager talks about the challenges ahead and eating Mexican food with Microsoft's president.
El Paso's premier business journal, El Paso Inc., is available for home and business delivery.
Subscribe online at elpasoinc.com or call El Paso Inc. at 534-4422 to subscribe.
Sunday on ABC 7 Extra, the new man at the helm of UTEP Athletics, Jim Settner, is live Sunday night at 10:35. He's already hired a new football coach, a new basketball coach, and is working to, as he says, wake up the sleeping giant. Also in the studio, new head basketball coach Rodney Terry. Get to know them this Sunday night on ABC 7 Extra after the news.
The program is live and interactive. You can send in your comments or questions via email, Facebook, Twitter, or just give them a call. This week, Rick Cabrera hosts. That's ABC 7 Extra, Sunday night at 10:35 on ABC 7.
All right, we're talking public art here. We've got all kinds of interesting people in the studio, including Adair Margot. We've got also Dr. Kate Green, curator, El Paso Museum of Art, and Melissa Warwick, who is a doctor professor person. A doctor professor person. You haven't called that in a while, I bet.
Well, in Germany, that's what you get called. So,
oh,
yeah.
And you teach it. On the phone here, we have a guy who knows a lot about the 12 Travelers Project. This is 12 Traveler number 13, I think. Is that you, Nick?
Yeah.
Nick Hauser, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, well, I enjoyed listening to your program earlier and the one that's going on now. That's very, very good. I think it's really good that we have celebrate our history and our public art and the 12 Travelers, as other projects, really celebrates the cultural diversity in our history. So we will have Benito Juarez. He's the monument being made now. That's going to be placed in front of the Chamizal, which is appropriate because he was in that area and he tried to help the people get their land back that when the river changed its banks and went on the U.S. side. But it's just really important. One thing I think is kind of interesting, I hope you don't mind me mentioning this, Melissa Sargent, her husband, her Bernie, has a historical relationship with a man who was with Fort Bliss, a military officer, that was assigned to help Benito Juarez in 1865-66, for 9 months. And And his middle name was Sergeant.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I talked to Bernie, and I guess the sergeants are from the Northeast United States, so that's kind of interesting. And you're Jackson Polk related to President Polk, right?
That may be true. I'm not sure about Bernie, but yeah, my case is accurate. But interesting.
Yeah.
And connect. And you're Nick Hauser. You're related to the guy who helped build the monument in South Dakota.
I guess so.
I know you.
Years ago, Dara Margo mentioned the tribal lawyer Tom Diamond.
Tom, yeah.
With the Tiwa Indians. Years ago, when I was a graduate student at the University of Arizona, I was going to go back to Oregon and work in a paper mill, double shifts, for the summer. And the professor said, anyone like to do some research on a tribe you don't know anything about? We got a call from a lawyer who would like to have someone spend the summer doing some research. So I went, and guess who that someone was? He was Tom Diamond.
Yeah.
And the tribe was the Tiwas, right?
Tiwas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he has he had, like Adair said, a large collection of my brother's work. And I'm really glad because this legacy that Trail of Travelers will continue with people there like Adair and others. And, you know, of course, the board, many people here in this town and the area, region. And I think that's really great. And I think it's wonderful that Ethan, who was like a teenager when he started working with his dad on this project, is now going to be the primary sculptor on this project. He was a primary sculptor on the Susan McGoffin, which is, you know, Keystone Heritage Park.
Well, now he's got it figured out. Now you're just going to have to help him keep going, right?
I know. So anyway, great. I just want to congratulate everyone.
Thank you, Nick,
Let's
for what you've done.
Our history and our culture. Thank you.
Thanks, you much. Nick. You take care, easy. Nick Hauser. I forgot to tell Nick he needs to write a book. Every time I talk to Nick, I say, when's your book coming out? He hadn't done it yet.
Can I just mention that at the memorial, the lovely service for John Hauser earlier this week, Ethan, his son, spoke, and he told some great stories about spending time with his father traveling to South America and to Ecuador and other places, and how his father taught him about art and history and humanity. And it's amazing that I think Ethan, as a young man growing up in this century, got a sort of a Renaissance education.
He did.
And what a wonderful thing for him to have experienced. And he's keeping it going now with continuing his father's work.
It's an interesting thing because you talk about public art. South Dakota, I mean, why would you put that there? It's because they had the money. Gutzon Borglum, the man who created that project in South Dakota, was in El Paso when he got the call to go to South Dakota. And he was in El Paso trying to stir up funds to take his artwork and his concepts to Waco Tanks. He was going to carve Old West figures and Indians and Old West stuff all over the front of what you now see as those big granite areas of Waco Tanks. That was going to be the next Mount Rushmore. The problem was El Paso had no money. He got a telegram from the people in South Dakota, said, we know who you are, we know what you can do, we have money, and boom, he was gone, and that's how that story occurred. But El Paso came real close. You know this story, Adair.
I knew it, and I knew that was one of the draws. John mentioned that. So sometimes it's a blessing not to have money. I mean, because we got to keep our beautiful mountains,
yep.
But then John brought the concept of historic figures and cast them in bronze.
Well, just think about a guy of that talent, because Gutzon Borglum had been in Georgia, I believe. He had helped on that Stone Mountain project. And so he knew how to do this. But when he showed up in El Paso, the money wasn't here. And just by that fact alone, had there been funding here, you would see a whole different world out there in the desert now. It wouldn't be it would be a very different historic site. So there's a lot of public art thinking right there. The public art that he ended up doing was probably the biggest in the West. I mean, is there any bigger public art than Mount Rushmore? That's huge.
I can't think
it's
of it.
Acres of faces.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, taller might be the Statue of Liberty. But no,
the volume, the depth of that whole thing. Well, the idea of public art in El Paso, let's keep that going for a moment here. Dr. Kate Green, a curator at El Paso Museum of Art, and also Melissa Warwick, and you're a PhD person teaching Tom Lee, but yes. All these other art courses as well.
I do, yes. So since I teach pretty much most of the art since 1850, at UTEP, then I get to kind of yeah, have my hands in a lot of different areas of history. So I did want to bring up something that Adair mentioned, which I think is really important, which is that when it comes to art, public art here in El Paso, there is actually a lot of competition for your visual space. And that is because the landscape is so striking and beautiful. And I can say this because I didn't grow up here. And I have students, you know, I take them to the Chinati Foundation in Marfa every year. And I had one a couple of years ago who, we were there for less than 24 hours, and she said, I really miss the mountains. I mean, she really felt very tied to the landscape, and that's something that I see with not just with art history students, but also with the studio art students. And so because of our amazing architecture, especially downtown, but all around, really, and then the landscape itself, there's a lot of attention for your kind of your eye space, really.
That's
true. What you're looking at. So in a way, I think that maybe Adair is right, that it is a blessing not to necessarily have, you know, so-called fine art that is disrupting the landscape of some place like Waco Tanks that has such amazing scenery as it is, that, you know, it's kind of like, why mess with, you know, you're gilding the lily at that point.
Well, this was like back in the 1920s, I think it was, and he could have pulled that off without any trouble.
Yeah.
If you'd had the funding to actually hire some people and go out there and do that.
Yeah, I'm not saying not to do it. I'm just saying it's an interesting case because I grew up in Houston, and public art is very much needed there because it's a concrete jungle.
Well, we
don't have that
problem.
Kind of flat.
I go to a place like Houston. I went from El Paso to Washington, D.C. for a career, and I stayed there for a long time. I kept looking around. How do I know where I'm at? And when you're downtown, you can focus on the Washington Monument. Mm-hmm. But once you get past about the first alphabet of streets, you can't see the monument anymore.
True.
I got lost in D.C. all the time. And in El Paso, I never got lost. The mountains are there. The mountains are everywhere. And the Indians of old used to recognize every mountain range, and they knew exactly where they were every day. Mm-hmm. And as a little kid, I could always say, oh, I know where I'm at. I'm out on Dyer or somewhere. My mother's driving around, and I'm 8 years old. I still know where I'm at, you know, that kind of world. Shelley, you got a caller in there? What do you have? Tell me who's on the phone here. We have Patricia on the phone. Patricia's on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. As usual, I'm sitting out here on Saturday morning at the cemetery, checking out everything, and nobody's talking back to me.
You're not listening.
Well, Patricia, I know what you're doing. You shocked a couple of people in the studio here. Think she's doing what? She's at Concordia Cemetery. This is Patricia Kidney, and she's the lady in charge of the cemetery.
And cleaning it up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, and it looks really marvelous. The flowers are really blooming up. We've got designated flower beds, and we've got some beautiful colors. The cactus are blooming. It's just a wonderful day to be here.
We may have to get out there and look at stuff.
Exactly. Great day for photography. What I do want to tell you is we're doing a tour this afternoon for a group of students. From Isleta High School. These kids are doing a play, a one-act play, on the soldaderas of the Mexican Revolution.
Okay.
They're going to be participating in UIL competition next Wednesday in Seminole.
Oh, good for them.
And so, so we want really everybody to keep your fingers crossed and say good things. I saw them Thursday night at Riverside do the performance. Really well done, very passionate. And their reason for coming out here to Concordia today is to see the graves and the tombs of people who were impacted by the Mexican Revolution.
Oh, yeah.
And particularly, they want to see where Huerta was buried.
Oh, yeah.
He was actually in the mausoleum from 1916, I think, to the mid-30s, 1930s. So I'm really excited about this group of young people, and I wanted everyone to cheer them on, think positively, and it's another way to talk about the Mexico-United States interaction. So I'm excited.
Well, Patricia, thank you for sharing, as always. We're not going to see you at Pepe's, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you will? All right. We'll see you out
Mexican
there.
Mexican food, of course.
I do everything.
All right.
I do everything. Yeah, it's 3 o'clock. This is not until 3 o'clock.
Oh, okay. You got plenty of time. All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Oh, yeah.
You
thanks.
Take,
bye-bye.
You take her easy. Mm-hmm. There are so many people in this town who are going to promote this town no matter what. You're one of them. Now, you know how to go get help. You've stirred up people all over the place. You now have the Tom Lee Trail going into New Mexico. You got into the legislature of New Mexico somehow and got them figured out. You got a Tom
Mary Kay Papin.
Cooper, Mary Kay Cooper. I used to ride horses at her house when I was a child.
But see, Dare Margo has got Tom Lee now going all over Texas on
Chihuahua
the trail.
Chihuahua next. I really
Oh, Chihuahua, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Interesting stuff. We need to take a break here and come back. Yeah.
And that's based on the Piero della Francesca Trail. When you think about art history, the whole concept came from my getting to travel and discovering different parts of Italy through a singular artist.
Interesting stuff. Taking a break here, 544-WHATEVER, if you need to call us.
544-KTSM.
My friends, if you own land, you know that spring is the best time of year to get work done on your property. Now, during the month of March, my good friends at Mahindra have special red tag savings on the toughest tractors and utility vehicles on earth. During the Mahindra Red Tag Sale, enjoy up to $7,900 in tractor cash back and savings, or utility vehicle savings up to $1,700. Plus, Mahindra's industry-leading warranties will come standard. So get the most out of your land and your budget with Mahindra's Spring Red Tag Savings. You'll see why 98% of Mahindra owners would recommend one to a neighbor. Learn more about rugged Mahindra utility vehicles and the world's number one selling tractor at MahindraUSA.com.
Take advantage of rock bottom prices and test drive a Mahindra today at Cisco Equipment in Artesia or visit Cisco-Equipment.com. That's Cisco-Equipment.com.
Indeed, used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com/hire.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles, and by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Jackson here with Wendy Polk. Melissa, hey. Back next week is the theory. And Adair, we did pick a special today, did we not? What was that? It was something or
combo
other.
Plate number
three, there because it had a chili relleno. And I love chili relleno, so I'm sure everybody else
does. Is today the day you're going to go with us and go out there?
Yes, I can't wait.
Okay. Oh, 6761 Donovan, if you need to get out there.
On the Camino Real.
And you know where. And it's sitting on a Camino. You're sitting there at that guy's restaurant. It's exactly where Oñate and his horse went through.
Is that right?
No, I guarantee it. I mean, I was there. No, I wasn't there.
Yeah, right.
But we were going to do that today after the radio program. And also, you have something to read about the War Eagles.
Well, if you've ever wanted to take a historic flight in a B-17, B-24, B-25, or P-51, you can do that out at the War Eagles Air Museum and the Santa Teresa Airport, April 4, 5, and 6. They're selling tickets now. They also need volunteers to help put this thing together. For information, call the museum, 575-589-2000.
You want to, my son went on one of those, our son Andrew, last
our
year,
son, yes,
B-17. And he had a fabulous time.
Oh, boy, did it look scary.
Oh, well, no, a guy like him, he did a live recording, live
Facebook
on Facebook
thing.
From up there. That was really bizarre.
That's
so
awesome.
History abounds in this little valley of ours. Well, Adair, we're about to wrap this up here. Public art and what it's done for El Paso. I'd like to get a comment from each of you about public art in El Paso. Can we do more history? Can we do more history? I'd love to see that. Anybody?
The next one I would love to see done is, of course, Benito Juarez. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I've learned so much about our history through John Hauser's projects.
Yes.
I knew nothing about Benito Juarez and his time spent in Juarez. And
he was an
you
Indian.
Know, dealing with, I mean, I just, yeah. his correspondence with Abraham Lincoln,
right.
That's all due to Nick Hauser. So I think having that Benito Juarez from child to man,
Mm-hmm. Which is really a tribute not just to him and his presence. When we did the Chamizal, you know, Mexico did Avenida Lincoln, and a monument to Lincoln mm-hmm. is part of that treaty in mm-hmm. respect to our country, and we never reciprocated. So this is another project.
It's time.
It's been on the books for the Chamizal for over 50 years.
And by the way, next week we're going to explain Chamizal a little more in detail on the radio show.
Great. And you know, but John Hauser, he's the type of person, too, who he had gone to the little village where Benito Juarez was from, San Pablo Galatao. I mispronounced it. But this little boy came up to him in this dusty little placita. And he said this was decades ago. He said, and he looked just like Benito Juarez.
Oh.
He even had a dog bite on his face Benito Juarez. And he knew from then that he wanted to incorporate him in a sculpture. Mm. So his concept is Benito Juarez from Child to Man. It'll be completed by Ethan. But it's this little Zapotec boy with his sheep and a book in his hand.
Oh,
because he was a Zapotec Indian without the privilege of having an education, but through the kindness of a family, he was able to achieve it. Education, and then become the greatest president of Mexico. He's sitting on a bench with the future president of Mexico. So it's communicating. You know, it's communicating so much, and the power of education, which is so significant for this community. It's about history. It's about it, and there'll be a medallion, you know, with
the... There's two figures on a bench. One's the little kid you're referring to,
right.
And one's Benito, the president.
That's right.
And you can sit in the middle and have your picture taken.
Right, that's
once
right.
Once they get it done.
Perfect. That's right.
Oh, that's going to be something
That's
else.
Right. And that's something that's happened at Tom Lee's Pass of the North mural. So one teacher brought a kitchen stool, so her children could stand up and have their head close to those giants of El Paso history.
To be part
of
so
it. Which is, it's a very powerful use of public art.
So I talked to you two, fairly new people to town who know art and know education, and you have a method because you learned how to look at this stuff. Mm-hmm. What are you now thinking about El Paso and public art? Do we need more of it? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think that history is the bedrock of everything, right? This is the past for all of us. And so I think no matter what we build, what we create, that the monuments and objects that we add to our landscape, we can always and should always think about them in terms of history. I think we could think about Sebastian sculptures in terms of history. That can be a tool for talking about history too. You know, talking about the history of partnerships and the cultural hybridity here. So I think us educators, all of us, are responsible, I think, for bringing it out as we add to things in our landscape, whether it speaks to history in obvious ways or less obvious ways.
Dr. Kate Green, thank you for being here. Have a thought, Melissa, for your Melissa Warwick?
You know what? I'm going to give a plug for UTEP because we have several outdoor sculptures mm-hmm. that are really wonderful. We have one by Willie Ray Parrish, who's a retired sculpture professor. We have a Sebastian. We have the Donald Lipsky, which is part of MCAD that is on campus. And then currently there's actually a faculty exhibition at the Rubin Center. And I want to give a little plug for the Rubin Center because they're so tight. It's for contemporary art, so art from the last 10 years or so. But there's really a way that the artists who come in to work with the Rubin work with in the community too. And I think that that's really important. And I would say one of the ways that we can have local pride is through our objects that are on display. And there is a way that we can get more people to understand the history of El Paso and why it's so important in the history of Texas, in the history of the United States, through our art.
Texas history begins in El Paso. Thank you for joining us.
Okay.
Everybody else, we'll see you. Pepe's here. Wendy, you're going. Adair's
I'm going for lunch.
If you guys can make it, this is a good day to go out there. We're having food at Pepe's, 6761 Donovan. See you next week on the radio program, ephistory.com for details. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM, El Paso.